Today's podcast is kindly sponsored by Boyne Valley Honey. Boyne Valley Honey is Ireland's favourite honey brand, and one of my daily healthy habits is incorporating Boyne Valley Honey into my daily routine. The health benefits of honey have been used for centuries. Honey acts as a natural remedy for cough and also has natural antimicrobial properties. I add Boyne Valley Squeezy Honey to my porridge every morning. Thank you, Boyne Valley Honey, for supporting this series of my podcast. I hope you enjoy listening today. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Deirdre Lundy, who is a GP with a specialist interest in women's health and menopause. She's from the USA, but went to medical school at UCD and never went back. Dr. Lundy has worked in all of the major family planning clinics in Dublin. At the Irish College of General Practitioners, Dr. Lundy is in charge of GP training in sexual and reproductive health. Dr. Lundy continues to work at GP-led gynaecology clinics at the Rotunda, the National Maternity Hospital and the Coombe. Dr. Lundy's recent contributions on menopause to the Joe Duffy Show meant that she got menopause trending in Ireland for all of the right reasons, and she is the queen of menopause in Ireland. And she's here today.
Self-diagnosed. Yeah.
And absolutely rightly so. So you're going to tell us today about menopause. Yeah. And this is so important because menopause happens to younger women as well. So a lot of my listeners might be women in their 30s, 40s, some younger, some older. But, you know, we need to, of all ages, need to know about it, know about the symptoms, not only to recognize it in ourselves, but also to support people who might be going through it. You know, so it's important that we all, know about it and hear what you have to say. So, what is menopause?
Well, the word menopause has one meaning only, which is the end of your menstruation, the end of your periods. Mm-hmm. So meno means periods and pauses in Greek is stop, you know. And medically, gynecologically, that's how doctors often still use that word, meaning you're either postmenopausal, meaning you don't get periods anymore, you can't get pregnant, or you're premenopausal, meaning you're still fertile. Theoretically, you know, but over the generations, that word has lost that absolute meaning for the general public. And now we say, I'm in the menopause or I'm going through the menopause, which is not 100% accurate. And it can cause confusion sometimes. So a new word was invented, but it's a valid word called the perimenopause, mm-hmm. which is when you're still bleeding, but you're getting symptoms of the reduction in capability of your ovaries. So basically that's what it is. Our ovaries, unlike men and their testicles, our ovaries just don't have 100 years in them. Mm. And in the 40s and early 50s, they kind of slow down initially and then they pack it in altogether. And it's a hell of a journey. It's like the reverse of puberty.
Mm. Yeah.
And it can be just as hard, if not harder.
Yes. Yeah. So what are the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause?
When I teach about it to nurses and doctors, I usually divide them into the physical and the psychological, okay. although there's huge crossover. One will do the other, if mm-hmm. you know what I mean. So physically, most people would be very familiar with things like the vasomotor symptoms, flushes, sweats, drenching the bed at night, up 5 times, changing sheets, that kind of a thing. A lot of women don't get that. Mm-hmm. A lot of women, their physical changes are more to do with things like joint pains, collagen decline, so their skin and hair and nails are completely different than they used to be. Mm. They feel their bladder control wouldn't be, like maybe they would have struggled a little bit, but now they're struggling a lot more. Mm-hmm. So a lot of physical things like that. And then the emotional ones are actually worse in some ways because you can put up with a certain amount of pain and discomfort. But if you're angry, irritable, depressed, and you've never had to struggle with those symptoms before, mm-hmm. and you're like, this is not me. I don't get rage. I don't get, you know, shouty at the kids or, you know. So it's often a new onset mood disorder. PMT, you would often meet women in their perimenopause who get quite obvious PMT type of symptoms, but they'd never had it before.
Yeah.
Chances are it's just menopause. Yeah, or not just, but menopause. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know what, actually, when we're talking about PMT, something that I'm asked a lot, actually, is if you get very bad PMT, are you more likely to have a bad menopause?
Good question. I don't know. I mean, PMT, finally, they found a gene for it, and it seems to be something got to do with the relationship between progesterone, inhibin B, these are two very important ovarian hormones, and neurotransmitters like serotonin and GABA and stuff like that, gabapentin. And so theoretically, I don't know of any data on this, but it wouldn't be a million miles from obvious.
Possibly, yeah. So what is the average age of menopause?
The average age of your last menstrual period
is
51.
Okay, good point. Okay? Yes, okay, yes.
So it's still 51. Now, having said that, you and I both have patients 55, 56, still getting periods.
Yeah.
It's pretty regular. So, you know, the cycle continues longer than it used to do. Maybe we're better nourished. I don't know why, but you see older women getting bleeds all the time nowadays when you didn't used to. But the actual symptoms, which often, the symptoms of the perimenopause will often start about 5, 6, 7 years before the final menstrual period.
Yes.
Longer in some cases, mostly around there. So I would say maybe early 40s, middle 40s would be typical. And the funny thing about them is in the beginning, they're sporadic. So you could go through a 3-month, 4-month patch where you are just awful. You are exhausted. You can't sleep because of the flushes. You're yelling at everybody. You know, people are wondering about your mental health. And then you get a recovery and you think, what the heck was that? You know, and then it maybe months go by. It doesn't happen again, but then it starts up. So you can get quite an up and down at the beginning of the perimenopause.
Makes
it harder to diagnose, of course, you know.
Yes. Mm. Okay, that is interesting.
Yeah.
So for about 4 or 5 years before your final period, you can start to get symptoms. Mm-hmm. They might be sporadic. Can menopause or perimenopause happen in younger people?
Yeah. If it happens in your 40s, particularly after your 45th birthday, we consider it kind of natural, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So it's still not good, and it still doesn't mean you should put up with it if you're struggling.
Yeah.
But statistically, the impact that it has on your future health is not as severe as if it happens at a younger age.
Yeah.
So anyone whose menopausal symptoms start in their 20s, 30s, younger life, you should be taken much more seriously insofar as healthcare is concerned, because to be a young woman without adequate hormone supply puts you in enormous medical peril. You're much more likely to get bone disease, heart disease, certain types of dementias. Vascular dementia is associated with early menopause, and we call that premature menopause or premature ovarian insufficiency.
Yes. Yeah. You and what the word you used to describe that on Joe Duffy, which I think was brilliant, was longevity. It's you know, it's a threat to your longevity. You know, the earlier it happens, and if you're not being adequately treated. That's a good point.
And you know, that happens to us sometimes if we have a childhood cancer.
Yes.
They often give us treatments or do surgeries that throw us into a medical menopause. And then sometimes doesn't always happen, but occasionally they can be a bit slow in the uptake about putting them hormones back. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and you mentioned their surgery, and this is another question I'm asked a lot, and I didn't actually realize this. No patient has ever said it to me, but people say to me online, as questions online, that taking out your womb, hysterectomy, a lot of people actually think that that will induce menopause.
It shouldn't, but it can.
Yes.
Any pelvic surgery can be linked to ovarian hormone failure.
Okay.
And even though they've left the ovaries, in fact, that'd be a standard gynecologist chit-chat before having your womb removed is, now you're only young, so I'm going to leave your ovaries and you're going to be fine.
Okay.
Sure as nuts are nuts, she's going to go into an early menopause.
Really?
I don't know what it is, and I don't know that there's any data on it, but I wonder if it's any disruptive pelvic operation having an impact on the vascular supply, the blood supply.
Yeah.
And that you get an earlier, you see it after tubal ligation sometimes. So all they've done is tie your tubes, which is a perfectly benign operation.
Yeah.
And then within about 6 months a year, you're like, holy God, I'm in the menopause. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Another guest on my podcast, actually, Dr. Mary Ryan, said that as well. Because she was saying if you finished your family, you don't need tubal ligation, that, you know.
Oh, get a Mirena. Please get a Mirena. Yeah. Because it's so much easier.
Yeah. She was saying as well that you can get the men to have a vasectomy.
Oh, yeah,
that was another option.
I never thought of that. Yeah, that'd be grand.
But she did say that as well about earlier menopause after tubal ligation. That's really important.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you think you have symptoms of menopause and you think, this is it, these are the symptoms and I'm pretty certain, what do you do? Do you go to your GP? How's it diagnosed?
Yeah. Well, traditionally, like up until about, say, the year 2000, most GPs had a pretty good handle on how to control symptoms for women because it was a fairly recognized phenomenon. The doctors had been trained about it during their gynecology residency. And in fairness, there was very limited medicines we had. It was all the horse's urine, so the Premarin products, Prempac C, that kind of a thing. And so you come in, if you were in bad shape, someone would give you a prescription, and 9 times out of 10, it'd fix you up, and you'd be delighted with yourself. And then a big study in America was done that put some kind of a question mark over the benefit of taking those horse urine tablets that, yes, we know they make your bones healthier, your heart healthier, but could they increase your risk of getting breast cancer? And the answer is they probably don't, but there is a small link. And really, from that moment on, that was 2002, nobody asked about menopause. No patients would accept HRT. Even the girls who needed it, the premature ovarian insufficiency girls, wouldn't even take it, which was obscene because the information that came out of that study was very, very unimpressive, I suppose the word is. That study said that if you use HRT for more than 5 years, and this is the horse's urine tablets now, your risk of breast cancer would go from 23 in 1,000 to 27 in 1,000. So people are like, oh my God, 4 extra cases in 1,000. And we're looking at that saying, cripes, if you're overweight, it's already 47 in 1,000. Yeah. It's more than double. Why on earth are we making such headline news out of horse urine hormone, HRT, and breast cancer? But it's a media phenomenon. If you put breast cancer in a published paper, it'll hit a headline.
That's it. And it was like this I suppose, cascade of Chinese whispers, and it gets amplified into HRT causes breast cancer.
It was in the paper.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people who were in menopause as a career were saying, this data is so flawed. These are studies looking at very senior women, 60, 70. Some of them were 79 years of age in this study, being put on enormous doses of oral horse urine estrogen. I was kind of amazed. We were amazed that not more harm was being done to these quite elderly women who'd never used HRT of any kind before, you know, didn't find the data all that impressive. And yet every day, the Daily Mail or the Sun or whatever would have, you know, my HRT nightmare, breast cancer, whatever. It was a nightmare. It was horrible.
It stuck. It's stuck in the amongst the general public, but it's stuck amongst doctors as well.
So now 20 years has gone by and only a small minority of patients have been inquiring about HRT. Mm. So quite understandably, there has been a natural de-skilling amongst general practice.
Okay, so that's kind of why that happened. Yeah. Okay. So, and that's why you are there to teach us all about it.
I never stop talking about it, but I don't, you know, you only learn by doing. Yes. So it's all well and good to listen to an hour of a lecture off of me, but if you're not being asked by the patients day in, day out, you're not being stretched. Whereas I think they're being stretched now.
Now we all need to just get our ducks in a row.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's a really good point as well, because now patients are informed and are more open to HRT.
Yeah.
Okay. So HRT is hormone replacement therapy. Mm-hmm. So you're replacing mostly the estrogen because it's the estrogen
that
is low.
That's the principle.
Okay.
One. Yeah. So our ovaries make 3 estrogens, E1, E2, E3. So it's E1 is estriol. Estrone, sorry. E1 is estrone. Estrone, estradiol, estriol. Okay. So we usually, E2 is the predominant one, estradiol, and that's what we replace. And really, without an adequate amount of estradiol, you're not you. Your bones are not healthy. Your heart's not healthy. Your brain doesn't work properly. Mm. And a little bit of estrogen usually gets rid of 90% of the symptoms.
Wow.
And that's all it is about. And in the beginning, when you're young, it's not... The medicines we use nowadays are nothing like the old school horse's urine stuff. These are synthetically derived, synthetically manufactured products, but whose molecules are identical to what comes out of the ovary naturally, the 17-beta estradiol. And you can buy those products in gels and patches and things like that. And when you give that to a youngish woman, all you're doing, you're not giving her extra. You're just flattening out the ups and down, up and down.
That is so important for people to hear. Yeah, we're not giving extra and topping it up and increasing your risk of cancer.
No.
Yeah, you're replacing. It's replacement.
You're putting it where it ought to be.
Yes.
You're putting it where your next door neighbor who's the same age as you, might be lucky enough to have hers because she's not getting symptoms yet.
Yes.
Yeah. It only becomes a bit of a game changer after you turn 55, 56, because really by that age, most women would have precious little ovary hormone left.
Yeah.
And so if you continue to use hormone at that stage, now you're shifting the dynamic.
Yes.
Now, having said that, I'm almost 60 and I'm not going to come off HRT.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're glowing.
Well, that's the choice I make. You know what I mean? That's my choice. Yeah. So, and I would say quite a proportion of people who are specialists in this area, if they're capable of taking products, they're on products.
Yes.
Yeah. Like most of us are on HRT, I would have said, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, what you said there as well about, you know, if you're low on estrogen, you know, if it's lower than it should be, you're not you. Because I think that's a big part of the brain fog, the difficulty performing at work. Relationships and, you know, mood, all of that, you know, that's
it's not
huge.
A femininity thing. It's a functionality thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't function without adequate estrogen
and
ideally a kind of a balanced estrogen. If you use estrogen in any excessive amounts or for any length of time, it can have a stimulatory effect, awakening up effect on the lining of the womb. So the rules at the moment are if you're going to take estrogen, you also have to take a little progesterone.
Yes.
Which is one of the other ovarian hormones.
Yes. Yeah.
Not everybody likes that hormone. That is the hormone of PMS.
Mm.
So sometimes the art of prescribing is we know the estrogen will almost certainly help. How are we going to sneak in with the progesterone?
Yeah, so it won't cause trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Not unpick the good that we've already done it. But we have so many different ways to do that. We usually find a nice combination.
Yes.
And then the last thing is the ovaries make male hormone. They make four different kinds of androgen. And some experts would argue, well, you don't miss that as much in your 40s and 50s because there's a natural decline in androgen throughout your 20s and 30s.
Okay.
And I think some of your listeners might have noticed that. People used to say, oh, it's because you're busy with kids, so your sex drive wouldn't necessarily be what it was before you had kids.
Yeah.
But in fact, there's actually androgen decline during your younger adult life. So it could be related to that.
Interesting.
So some sources would say, listen, you wouldn't need to focus so hard on replacing the male hormone for older women, but particularly with the POI girls, the young menopause girls, by all means, they should be on testosterone. But now all the experts are saying, hang on a minute, you know, why can't we have some testosterone?
Yes, absolutely. So do you routinely prescribe testosterone?
I wouldn't do it at the outset.
Okay.
I focus more on the estrogen.
Yes.
Because estrogen is the mainstay of your well-being and your treatment and all the rest of it. And getting the estrogen-progestogen balance right takes a couple of months sometimes.
Yes.
Once I have that done, if I'm aware of the fact that the patient has sex drive issues, that's the only thing it's actually licensed for at the moment is libido.
Yes. Okay.
Having said that, I know a lot of women who felt that brain fog that's part of the menopause is improved by testosterone supplements.
Okay. And that's a really important message as well with hormone replacement therapy. It's an art of balancing it.
Yeah.
And it's not, it can be, you know, a bit of trial and error and just trying to get that balance right.
Yeah.
And then the HRT hormone replacement therapy. So for women for women with a womb or uterus in situ, so they'll need
progesterone.
They have to take the progesterone. If you don't, you don't have to take progesterone. Yeah.
So if you've had a hysterectomy, the other little exception to the rule is if you're wearing a Mirena, and it can't be any other coil or intrauterine device. It has to be Mirena.
Yes.
And if that little Mirena has been in you for less than 5 years,
because
it's a 6-year contraceptive now, that's important that your listeners
Don't
take out a perfectly good Mirena because five years. Then you don't have to have any progesterone.
Yes, because it has progesterone in it, and that's protecting the womb.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and people, when discussing HRT with patients, they're often surprised when they hear that, because I offer the Mirena in the first instance for progesterone, because it'll also give contraception.
Yeah.
And
it's handy.
It's a nice way of sneaking in the progesterone.
And it lightens periods.
Yeah.
So if you meet a woman who's getting some menopausal symptoms who needs contraception, as you do if you're still getting the odd period and you're under 50, like 55, and who also might be suffering from excessive blood loss during periods, a Mirena really ticks every box.
Yes.
But not everybody wants something in their body.
No.
You know, if
yeah.
you've never had a vaginal delivery or if you've never had kids at all, sure. maybe you're not even sexually active. The idea of an invasive procedure like that is really off-putting.
Sure. Some people just don't want it. It's not for some people. Yeah. So then if you're, how do you take it? So there's patches, there's gels, there's tablets.
The only way to get the natural stuff, the high quality stuff, which most people tend to lean toward, if everything else is equal mm-hmm. and you have a choice, obviously you're going to take the best.
Yes.
And the best is the naturals, the 17 betas, which come in either gel, patch, or would you believe there's now a high-speed spray.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Lenzetto. It looks like an air horn, a mini air horn, and you just go like that. And
so
you,
handy.
Yeah, so handy and cheap. Okay. But you have to buy it in the North, though, because they don't have it in the Republic.
You were saying that on the Joe Duffy. But and do prescriptions from the Republic of Ireland work then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can either drive up now that we're allowed to travel, or some of them will take your information over the phone and just post
Send you a product. I heard that,
yeah, exactly.
But all of that, that scenario was just, it was really, I think that was symptomatic of, you know, how much women are kind of struggling with this. Yeah.
Pharmacies, a lot of Irish pharmacies either couldn't or just, I know from my own buddy, Quinn's Pharmacy in Bray is my go-to because poor Alton, years ago, he saw all my prescriptions coming to him for the local women and he was like, can I buy you a cup of coffee and can you explain to me what the hell
going
is
on here?
I said, of course, you know, because I use a lot of unlicensed stuff.
Okay,
you know? But it's like licensed medicine, but I'm just using it in a different way.
Yeah.
So, so he has every day.
Yes.
And then, so like what we do is we make sure that he has the stuff in stock that we're going to use. But how he gets it, I believe, is he has to be really frosty. Like almost every single day, he has to get onto the supplier websites and get in there fast because certainly during 2020 and 2019, there were stock shortages.
Yeah.
And you couldn't, you'd start a product and you loved it. Mm. And then you go back to the pharmacy, they couldn't
Not
get it for you.
That's so frustrating.
In the old days, we used to go to Spain and buy it over the counter, but you can't even do it.
Yeah, with COVID.
Anyways. So those are the best estrogens.
Okay.
I don't want to say utrogestan is the best progesterone. Okay. It is the one it's the only one that we can pretty handily access in Ireland that directly mimics the progesterone that comes out of our ovary.
Yes.
And it just makes sense, doesn't it? Sure. If you're going to put a hormone back, wouldn't you like to have the same as what's already in there?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But there's loads of artificial progestogens that you can use instead, like the levonorgestrel that's on a Mirena, or you can use a little Provera. You can use this other drug, dihydrogestrone. It comes in a pill called Duphaston. So a good menopause HRT doctor will know all the recipe. Like,
It's a recipe. Mm-hmm. And it's like a cauldron of things. And you have to like tease out what is going to be acceptable to the patient, what they want to do. Some people don't want a patch, some people don't want Mirena. So it's very much what the patient wants.
And when
wants.
A patient is talking to me about, I like this, but this is not helping.
Yes.
And in my mind, I'm taking myself through all the possible combos to find the best choice for her. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really how it is. And so it's important as well for patients to know that that it can be a process.
Yeah.
It can take some time.
And don't beat the poor old doctor up because it is an art.
Yeah,
and because we haven't been practicing that art for 20 years, you know, it's not fair to demand perfection overnight. But if you can help, if you can, you know, say, I've done some reading, I've done some research, this is recommended for this kind of thing. And then, you know, so long as you don't have, you know, crazy demands, I can't see why. There are almost no contraindications to HRT. So, you know, if you're a well woman and you don't have abnormal blood pressure or, you know, other serious diseases like hormone-dependent cancers or liver disease is a bad one, severe liver disease. Mm-hmm. Porphyria. I don't even know what that is. Do you know what that is?
Porphyria.
Madness of King George. That's all I know, porphyria.
I learned about that when I was doing the US MLEs.
It's a blood, blood disorder.
Yeah, purpurine or something.
Purple pee. Yeah. It's very rare.
Yes.
But it's one of the few things cited as an absolute verboten.
Absolute contraindication.
Other than that, I mean, you can be overweight, you can have migraines, you can smoke, you can have diabetes, you can drink too much, you can be sedate, you know, not active, you know, sedentary.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas you would never give the contraceptive pill.
I was just going
to
say,
to those girls.
Yes.
But you can give HRT.
Okay. Mm. So most people, vast majority of people are suitable candidates for HRT and it can help all of those symptoms and it's just replacing predominantly the estrogen.
Primarily the estrogen, yeah.
So, but for this is something I'm asked a lot as well, for women who can't have estrogen, yeah, and they've been told by their GP, look, this is an absolute contraindication. We absolutely can't safely do this.
The only people who are really going to hit a wall when they're looking for help would be women with breast cancer primarily. Mm-hmm. So estrogen, progestogen, receptor positive breast cancer particularly. We know this poor woman had a tumor. She had a malignancy. Mm. She might have had a bit of tissue removed. She's almost certainly going to be on some kind of hormone suppressive medication, yes, like tamoxifen or, you know, aromatase inhibitor drugs of some kind. And their focus entirely is on keeping that cancer, yes, at bay and keeping her alive for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. And they've done amazing things in that regard. Mm-hmm. And longevity after breast cancer is enormous, you know.
Yeah.
But they don't think about the woman who lives inside of the breasts.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
if she can't cope with what the treatment has done to her, then an individual approach has to be taken. You can't have, oh, well, the protocol 2A PR positive breast cancer is you take this, this, and this for 5 years, because that human being may not be,
yes,
able for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these, and that kind of goes for all medicine, isn't,
yeah,
it? And that's a lot of what being a GP is, knowing the science, knowing the guidelines,
sure,
but then you have the person.
Sure.
Yeah. So you brought up a good point there just about breast cancer.
Okay, so what do we do for those poor women? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose what we do, and also can we talk about, like, do you need a mammogram before starting
HRT? Oh, gosh, no. Okay.
Okay.
So if you're not due a screening mammogram, you're over 50 and you,
yes,
get them every 2 years, you certainly wouldn't jump the queue or try to get a private one prior to,
yeah,
starting, because nothing in HRT is carcinogenic. You know, the sun causes cancer. Cigarettes,
yes,
cause cancer.
Yeah.
Benzene causes cancer.
Yeah.
HRT absolutely does not cause cancer.
That's amazing.
Bottom line.
Yeah.
But if you have the potential to get a hormone-sensitive cancer, mm-hmm, say you're brewing one.
Mm-hmm.
We usually, the data I've seen says that most women have cancer in them about 6 to 8 years, undetectable, before they find a lump.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're at the beginning of that journey, and any of us could be, it's the second most common cancer in women, and you give a person a long feed of hormone, you may actually bring the diagnosis ahead of schedule,
yes,
yeah. You haven't given her cancer out of the blue. She,
yep,
would have gotten it eventually anyway.
Yes.
And it's funny, all this data comes from that horse's urine study out of America. There are other studies, though, that also link long-term HRT use with breast cancer. So that's not the only one. But almost all of them show that women diagnosed with breast cancer while taking HRT actually do better and,
yeah,
live longer.
They're diagnosed earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of it is that, because we're surveilling them. But
okay,
I think the other thing is the treatment options for women with hormone sensitive cancers are better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So their outcomes are better.
Their outcomes are better.
That's
so
very interesting.
I certainly wouldn't let the fear of breast cancer.
Sure.
Well, I haven't done, clearly.
Yeah.
I'm still on it. But,
yeah,
you know, I do fear, yeah, breast cancer. Who doesn't?
Who
what
doesn't
woman
fear
doesn't?
Cancer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I know.
Yeah.
So, okay. And then going back to, if we can't give HRT, are there other options,
yeah,
available to help with the symptoms?
The sad truth of the matter is nothing else is going to be as effective. That's just how it is. If you have an underactive thyroid and you, for whatever reason, don't want to take L-troxin, well, I don't know, what the hell. What am I going to do for your exhaustion? What am I going to,
yes,
do for your gaining weight all the time? I'm going to have to try to cherry pick different therapy.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't do it. You just take the damn L-troxin.
Yes.
You know, you'd be considered,
yes,
mad not to.
Yeah.
Well, with HRT, the same problem arises. So for some of the physical things, we can get around it. Sadly, very few treatments have been shown to, well, none of them are as effective as HRT. And some of them have been shown to be pretty much the same as placebo.
Really?
Meaning they work for a couple of months
because, yes,
you know, you're very enthusiastic. You really want it to happen.
Sure.
And then you fall back to square one again after, say, 3 or 4 months. So medicines like antidepressant drugs, like the SSRIs and the SNRIs, are often offered to particularly breast cancer survivors.
Yes.
You have to be careful with some of them, though, because some of them interfere with tamoxifen. So depending on what drugs you're on, you're very limited what you can use. We use other things. There's a drug, an old-fashioned drug they used to use for blood pressure years ago called clonidine.
Yes.
It's an alpha agonist, and it just stops your blood vessels from opening, closing, opening, closing, which is where the flushes come from. And 75 milligrams of that every day certainly can help reduce the number and the severity of the flushes. But, like, you know, it's not going to make you better. It really isn't.
Sure.
Oxybutynin can help a little bit with that, too. And these are all things that have been evaluated in Europe, for the most part, by menopause researchers and gynecological researchers. And really, the data is not, it's not overwhelming, sadly.
Okay, yeah. So if you are a candidate for HRT.
Oh, that's your only man.
Like, that's where to go.
Yeah.
So we got a little bit sidetracked, and I knew this would happen speaking to you. I just knew it. I know, it's my fault. It's my fault. Diagnosis, how is
that's such a good question.
Diagnosed?
Yeah. So the British Menopause Society is the kind of, there's loads. There's the Australian, the international, the European, the American. But we mostly turn to the British Menopause Society for our guidelines because we don't have an Irish equivalent. There isn't any kind of research-based group that gives us recommendations based on population data, part of which is because we don't have a huge population, nor the funding to do as much research as they do in the UK. And they're very clear. They're like, this is primarily a clinical diagnosis. Because it's about hormone fluctuance, if you take a blood test on any given day for a woman, say, 46, 47, the numbers may say one thing, and then 24 hours later, they can have they can be double or half.
Yeah.
There is no consistency with blood tests. So there are no convenient blood tests for the diagnosis of the perimenopause. If you no longer get periods spontaneously, you just don't get periods anymore, chances are your bloods will show very definitive changes then. And we use blood tests in that situation occasionally to tell you when you no longer need contraception. That's a different story. But when you meet a woman who's particularly a woman who's still getting the odd period who gives you a list of symptoms, you don't have to do blood tests. The diagnosis is looking at you in the face. Now, some ladies don't like that and they want to get a blood test done. And that's their choice. I mean, I presume they're not asking for anything kind of insane. Like, of course, and it's probably no harm to do a midlife MOT kind of blood count, thyroid, cholesterol.
Exactly.
Why not? But is any of that going to help me diagnose your symptoms? No. No.
And so my experience has been is that patients do want the blood test. So, look, that's not unreasonable. But it doesn't necessarily always give a black and white answer in terms of perimenopause and menopause. But it is a great opportunity to check, you know, cholesterol and, you know, fasting
lipids,
blood glucose.
Exactly.
So, but it isn't actually needed to start to make the diagnosis.
If you're young, you should. So everybody under 40 should have all the sex hormones measured, the FSH, the LH, estradiol, the progesterone, everything, you know, prolactin. Because every once in a while, it's not a spontaneous premature menopause. It's some other disease, like a tumor on the anterior pituitary or whatever. We need to make sure we know what we're dealing with.
It's different in a woman in her 30s. That's different. We need, this is not normal.
No.
This is not expected. But it is different for women in, you know, 40s, 50s. Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's like as if some 12-year-old came in and she was getting some discomfort in her period and she was a bit ratty. You'd hardly do blood tests because you know what's wrong with
I know,
her.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. So then, you don't need to do the blood test to confirm it to start HRT or to make the diagnosis. And also, you don't need to have finished getting periods to start HRT either.
No. In fact, most of my patients would still be cycling. Now, not necessarily every month, but some, you know, but certainly it'd be very common for me to have to now discuss contraception in conjunction with HRT because, you know, some women don't think they need contraception as they get older, and they're so wrong.
They think that HRT is contraception.
And it isn't. In fact, if anything, arguably, if you go on the version of HRT where the estrogen is used on a continual basis, but the progestogen is only taken 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, that actually enhances your fertility.
No way.
So you want to be really careful if you haven't been good with condoms or whatever your contraceptive of choice. And really, pretty much every contraceptive, the typical ones that older women would use, things like the mini pill, you know, the desogastrol pills, Azalea, Sarazette, that kind of thing, they can use them with.
In addition.
But not instead of. Never instead of.
That's a really important message. So for, is that guideline of
to British menopause.
Yes. Yeah. So the over 50, under 50 yeah. contraception guidelines.
Yeah.
So what I
so that's those? More that actually that information comes from another UK body called the Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Health, and
yes.
their notion. You see, they're a government thing, and medicine is free in England and you know Scotland, yeah. Northern Ireland. So they want to minimize the expenditure. So their plan mm-hmm. is nobody gets blood tests to find out if they need contraception. Just make sure everyone uses contraception until they're 55.
Okay.
That's their recommendation.
Yeah.
Because imagine doing all those FSH blood tests cost an absolute fortune, yeah. you know. We here tend to be a little bit more moderate, saying, look,
yeah.
theoretically, every woman needs contraception until she's 55 if she's having, you know, a heterosexual relationship.
Yes.
But if you haven't bled for at least a year
mm-hmm.
and you're over 50,
yes.
there's a significant chance you're done.
Yeah.
Two follicle-stimulating hormone tests done at a six-week interval.
Yes.
Where both of them are elevated, that's a very reassuring sign. Chances are you're probably finished.
Yes.
But they would still hedge their bets and say, just use something for 12 more months
yeah. okay.
in case
yeah.
they come
yeah.
back out of nowhere. Now, they
yeah.
almost never do.
Yeah.
With young women, you have to be super careful.
Yes.
I've had women 42, 43 whose periods have shut down.
Yeah.
Haven't had a bleed for 3 years,
yeah.
4 years. Horrendous menopause symptoms.
Yes.
Put them on HRT. Fertility comes back.
Yeah.
So it's very unpredictable for the young girls.
It is young unpredictable.
Women.
So, yeah, you do have to be careful mm. with them just and speak about contraception
with
your GP all the
yeah.
time. So then that brings me just onto, you know, this idea of longevity. I think that was a really nice point. Because, look, obviously, in the first instance, you know, we want the woman to feel herself and to feel well and have a good quality of life. And that was a lot of the discussion on Joe Duffy, which I think was really good. But the point is all about, like, actually how long we live, how healthy we are, like our heart health.
Yeah.
Because estrogen protects the heart.
Yeah.
And bones as well, our bone health. So just in terms of, though, like heart health and bone health for perimenopausal and menopausal women, what are the things we should be doing?
Estrogen has a big role to play in both heart and bone health and their physiology. So the bone is a living tissue.
Mm.
It's constantly being damaged, melted down and built back up again.
Mm-hmm.
And they call that melting down damaged bone and building new bone coupling.
Mm.
And the rate at which bone cells couple is completely controlled by estrogen. And if you don't have an adequate amount of estrogen,
yeah.
coupling starts to go haywire and you end up with net bone loss.
Yes.
And that's osteoporosis.
Okay.
So women who go through early menopause are significantly at risk of osteoporosis.
Yes. Yes.
Which doesn't sound as scary as breast cancer.
Yeah.
It is way more lethal.
Yeah.
A third of us are likely to die from a complication of a broken hip
yes.
if we get to our late 70s, 80s. So if you're looking at not only longevity, but also quality of
yes.
life. Do you want to be independent and yep. not in a wheelchair and not on a walker? Do you need to maintain your bone health?
Absolutely. Mm. That's so important, actually. Mm. Yeah, because when I talk about osteopenia or osteoporosis and I say falls and fractures, and I actually just kind of rhyme it off as though it's just, but it's actually, it
yeah.
is so, it has a huge impact on
people. We accept
lives.
It as almost natural, like, oh,
yeah.
a little old lady falls and breaks her, you know, callus
yes.
fracture of her wrist, she breaks her hip. That's preventable.
Yes.
You know, if
yeah.
you keep balanced,
mm.
if you nourish yourself,
yes.
keep your vitamin D levels
yes.
adequate, and we all need vitamin D
yeah.
supplementation. You know,
yeah.
we don't, none of us get enough vitamin D.
Yeah.
And then watch your wherever possible, watch your estrogen. Now,
yeah.
you can't. If you choose to take estrogen for bone protection,
yes.
it doesn't work once you stop the estrogen.
Yes.
So if a woman has been on HRT and has enjoyed good bone health as a result,
mm-hmm.
and then she decides to wean herself
mm-hmm.
off, and that's her decision. No one should ever make you
stop
HRT.
Yes.
You decide when you want to stop
yes.
it. You should consider maybe moving in with something else if you're high risk for fractures and
sure.
falls, you
so
know.
Another treatment for osteoporosis.
Yeah.
Because HRT is actually a treatment
it
for
is.
Osteoporosis.
Yeah, it's a prevention drug
yes.
and a treatment drug.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So that's an important thing. And, you know, when they look at breast cancer survivor data and what actually takes those women's lives, it's usually bone and heart.
Fractures.
Yeah.
yeah. Okay.
Because their poor old bones
okay.
have been through the wars,
yes.
you know. And then the other thing is heart. So
yeah.
estrogen has a significant role when it comes to heart health, particularly the rate at which plaques, clogging,
mm-hmm.
develops in the circulation to our brain and our neck, the circulation to our heart, in the blood vessels of the heart. And estrogen tends to act like Teflon. For
okay,
plaques
yeah.
in the
yeah.
heart. So you'd often see, you know, you'll have families in the practice where, God love them, everyone's got heart disease. unfortunately, say they might be overweight or smoking or struggling to control their blood pressure, the women usually do all right
yes.
until the menopause.
Yes.
And then when they lose the estrogen protection, their risk of getting symptomatic heart disease shoots up.
Yes.
So primary prevention of heart disease is a big area that HRT is being explored
yes.
in at the moment,
okay.
saying if you see a woman who has high blood pressure, obviously control it. Who's overweight, who's smoking, obviously try to make an intervention there.
Mm-hmm.
But don't deny her estrogen. In fact, the estrogen is maybe the one thing keeping her out of the damn hospital,
okay.
you know. So that now you do have to be careful. Women at high risk of cardiovascular disease, oral estrogen can cause clots.
Yes.
Even in HRT, even the tiny amounts in HRT. Gels and patches don't.
Okay, that's a really important
So that's
message.
Important
yes.
to say
okay.
that. And I know a lot of women have been denied access to HRT because either they've had a personal history of a blood clot. I get that. I understand the hesitation from the GP point of view. And I think you're right. If there was a specialty center, that woman should go to that specialty center.
Yes.
And hopefully there will be in the future. But if she's had like a sister.
Mm. Yeah. Yes.
Of course she can take HRT. Yes. Just avoid the oral stuff.
Yes. It's the tablets with estrogen that are associated with that increased clot risk.
Because any oral estrogen hormone, even the strong stuff in the pill and the weak stuff in the HRT has to go to the liver first. And it has an impact on the proteins in the liver that control clotting. But when you deliver the estrogen in tiny natural doses through the skin, it doesn't have a thrombogenic effect, as they say. Now, women who've had blood clots in the past are still more likely to get them in the future because they have damaged veins.
They've had a blood clot.
Exactly. So you do have to have a big old chit-chat about that because you wouldn't like someone to be on a patch or gel and then get another clot and say, you did this to me.
Yeah.
You know, that is, so that conversation should be had before you prescribe.
Sure, absolutely. So then this is something I'm asked about almost every medical condition is there, you know, a diet that I should be on? Like, should I take something? Is there a lifestyle measure? Is there a supplement? Is there an alternative?
You're
going
to hate me saying
this. No, I'm not going to hate. There's no way I could hate you about anything.
If there is, I haven't found it, and I certainly haven't read about it.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, and I'm talking 30 years ago, we used to say, there must be something in soya.
Yeah.
Because if you look at Japanese women, they don't get menopause. Mm. They get menopause. Mm. Male Japanese doctors just didn't believe it existed.
Don't talk about it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my
so
God.
So after all these years of promoting soya for menopause in Japanese women, we realized it's always the patriarchy or capitalism, as my daughter says. And in this case, it was the patriarchy.
Okay. No, and I think that's important for people to hear as well. Just about, you know, diet, lifestyle,
listen, I think it's always worth trying stuff. So drugs like red clover extract have been proven to be completely safe.
Okay.
Unlikely to, like, say if you had breast cancer and they won't give you any hormones, there's nothing harmful in red clover.
Okay.
We worry some of the supplemental drugs, supplemental herbal-y things could have quite active estrogen-like chemicals in them, which may be no safer or less safe than HRT. So you want to be super careful with those kind of products.
Yeah.
But certain things like red clover, magnesium, I have read good things about.
Yes.
Maybe not so much with flushes and sweats, but certainly when it comes to things like joint and mood, magnesium supplements, no harm that I'm aware of.
Yeah, Dr. Ryan said
magnesium
as well.
Magnesium, I don't know. In fairness, I haven't read that much. And there are doctors in Ireland who are way more knowledgeable about the non-HRT supplements and lifestyle things. Certainly CBT, mindfulness, exercise cannot be overemphasized how important that is for all of us, but particularly women going through difficulties.
Yeah, so cognitive behavioral therapy. Are there any just like things like cooling pillows, cooling mattresses or anything?
There's a whole industry around them.
Yeah.
Like people have given me stuff. I've bought some for the laugh. Like I had that magnet, you know, the magnet you wear on your underwear and stuff.
Have you never seen that? Look it up.
It's a little magnet shaped like the shape of a uterus, really, like a little avocado shape.
Yeah.
And it has a very powerful magnet and you put the front of it on the front of your neck. The magnet thing goes on the back. And the problem is if you lean against a table, everything metallic shoots.
What is it supposed to
nothing.
Do?
Nothing. It does nothing. You know, so, but they sold this to women.
But that is why I'm doing this podcast, because I just want people to get the real information.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy day.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for
being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to today's podcast, which was kindly sponsored by Boyne Valley Honey. Boyne Valley Honey is Ireland's favourite honey brand, and you can follow them on Instagram at Boyne Valley Honey for inspiration on how to incorporate honey into a part of your daily healthy routine.